Hey guys, Oscar here. Real quick here, a little disclosure. Disclaimer? Disclosure. One of them. Before the show starts, anyway. So out of the three films here, Mission Impossible, Bleeding Edge, and The Shop Around the Corner, Mission Impossible were good. But The Bleeding Edge, which is a documentary, and The Shop Around the Corner from a movie, it was, you know, an old movie from 1940, those two reviews have actually no spoiler separation. We didn't really realize it. We were just having a conversation about it, and we realized afterwards that, you know, kind of spoiled everything. So I'm letting you guys know now that there is no spoiler warning or spoiler-free section or whatever. So, like, it's all spoilers. So just go in there. I mean, we don't spoil everything off the bat, but, you know what I'm saying? We get into it pretty much all in a row. So I'm letting you guys know now. So enjoy the show.
You know what this is like? It's like those old movies we both love.
Now I'm going to tell you my whole plan, and then I'm going to come up with some absurd and convoluted way to kill you, and you'll find an equally convoluted way to escape.
Sounds good to me.
Well, this ain't that kind of movie.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, the show that makes official movies feel completely unofficial with Luke's opinions. I am Oscar, and with me today is...
Obviously Luke.
Obviously. Dick. Back from the island of Dr. Monroe. Monroe, not Monroe. How are you doing, Luke? How's the home away from home?
It is spectacular. I'd have to see your ugly fotch.
I definitely don't want to see you either. That's great. I mean, Chicago does feel a little, not more safer, I'm not going to say that, but it feels more bearable, you know, without you here, more manageable, if you will.
Yeah, I miss you too, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. I hope you're picking up what I'm putting down. Let's see. You're becoming a type of person that likes being on the road. You're like a truck driver minus the truck driving.
Yeah, I'm a roadie. What can I say?
Yeah, you're becoming a... It's funny because that's like always a lifestyle I've always liked for myself too. Just never really got the in-how or how to do it, you know? Anyway, this is episode... Enough of that nonsense. This is episode number 56. And today's show is no different than most of our other shows. What we typically do is that we review three films. One of them tends to be a marathon pick. A marathon is several films that we each of us, the three of us, my co-host Roth, who's usually the third one, he'll be coming in later on, guys. We all choose films based on one theme or genre or whatever, and we explore it with a few of our picks. This time, our marathon pick, and the last one for this current marathon, is going to be today, and it's going to be The Shop Around the Corner by Ernst Lubitsch. It's from the 40s, I think. 1940s. I'm not 100% right now.
And that's pretty old.
Part of our marathon that we're calling Alpha Classics, where we talk about older films that have shaped or have started new trends within themselves in current movies today, or at least something you can see in the follow-through of movie making. And then we'll have two other film reviews as usual, and those two films are almost always new films. So we'll be reviewing Mission Impossible Fallouts today, which is the sixth installment, I think. And then we'll be discussing Kirby Dick's latest documentary called The Bleeding Edge, which is on Netflix if you are interested in watching it. So check that out. You can check out our podcast, our website. Sorry, I meant to say our podcast website. Our website over at otherpodcast.com. Yes, I have fixed the website. It is fixed. I checked it just now. It works.
I told you, just pay the damn guy.
No, it wasn't that. It was actually they kicked me out of the thing, and I had to set up a new account and pretend to whatever. Anyway, I had a guy help.
Pay them? Yeah.
No. I wasn't paying them. They wouldn't let me pay them. Anyway, doesn't matter. Don't be Luke. You know, just don't be Luke. So you can check out our shit there, our previous marathons, some of the other stuff we've discussed, and you know, top tens and stuff like that. Also, what's on there is our bonus episodes. How bonuses work is very simple. Every month we choose an extra episode based on a movie that's coming out in that month in major theaters. And we review it for those who donate to our show, which again, you can find at that website. And those who donate get that bonus episode. And then people, for the rest of the audiences out there, they get it 5 months down the line for everyone. So the one that came out 5 months ago, the review for the bonus 5 months ago was Red Sparrow. And that's coming out mid-August for you guys. Obviously, those who donate already got it. And the movie that we'll be offering for those first timers today or this month is going to be First Reformed, which is a film that just came out on VOD and is actually kind of it was a very select movie theaters when it came out. That's the one I'm choosing tentatively until I find something better. I may change that, but I will let you guys know. All right. And another thing we discussed here is recent discoveries. And unfortunately, Luke and Ralph have not seen anything. Obviously, Ralph is not here yet. He'll be in for another recording session. But either way, Luke, why haven't you seen a movie?
I've been playing video games and watching The Office.
And rewatching The Office, you mean?
No.
Oh, I thought you had seen it before.
I've never watched The Office.
Oh, are you finding it enjoyable?
Yeah. I've been watching it on Comedy Central, so I've been like skipping back and forth between like seasons, but I'm kind of grasping everything. So now I'm starting to actually watch it from the beginning.
Okay. Yeah. Is it holding up? Is there like a time lag, you know, where if you watch something from a different decade, do you feel like you're behind, like it's weird now or too late or...
No, I'm just surprised how many people like came out of that show.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I definitely have heard of that. Some people would be like, oh, yeah, that's that girl from The Office. When John Krasinski wasn't as famous yet, and people were like, oh, yeah, he's in this movie. He's like, I'm like, who's this guy? He's like, he's from The Office. You know, she's in The Office. Like, no, I don't watch The Office. But like, you know, so I'm always that person that never seen The Office. But fuck it. Cool. Any big game you've been playing that you love?
I just started playing The Witcher 3.
Oh, man, how's that?
Pretty brutal. I actually set it to have Polish audio.
Whoa.
How's that? It's pretty intense.
Why? It's a Polish rendition, like, do they swear more or something? Is that what you mean by intense?
No, that's how it was made originally.
Oh, it's made by a Polish company?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Cool. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, the Witcher franchise is a Polish fantasy novel.
I didn't know that. Okay, awesome. Yeah. The more you know, I know. Ring. All right, so, yeah. But you haven't seen any movies, so nothing really hardcore.
Yeah, nothing
to discuss.
That comes to mind.
Well, you and Ralph better catch up to movies next time. Then.
I make no promises.
You should. So you're going to say something?
Nine.
All right, so I saw three movies, one based on your recommendation, Luke, actually. So I'll start with that one.
Yeah.
Last time around, you discussed Downsizing, which is...
What's
that dude's name?
Matt Damon?
No, Matt Damon is the star of that movie, but I mean like the guy who directed it. Oh my God, I had his name in my head like a second ago. It's gone. Either way, Downsizing, look it up. Came out last year around Christmas time. It's a movie that I sorely dislike. Like really, really did not jive at all with me. And the premise of this movie is that, you know, technology was invented where these Norwegians or whatever discovered a way to literally shrink human beings down and in a way to save the economy and save the world from global, you know, warming and disasters like that. And, you know, because we sorely need to fix that problem. And this is like a solution. And you skip 10 years. It's a very realistic depiction of how it eventually gets into the cultural zeitgeist and it becomes popular and becomes like an in thing to downsize, literally downsize. And they try to do it. And Matt Damon's character is the guy we're following for the movie. The problem I have with this movie, which is an awesome premise, the problem I have with this movie is that the premise is the best thing about it. And they choose literally the most boring character on the planet, the most boring version of any character they can think of, to choose as our vessel to walk through us in this world, like to understand this world or understand what kind of world were this, you know, near futuristic movie is portraying. And I feel like it loses so much potential in the process of like showing us this very boring man trying to be interesting the whole movie, and he never is. And obviously what's worse is that everyone around him is super interesting, which is like a big tease because the movie's not about those people. Anyway, that's just my general consensus of how I felt about the movie. I'm not gonna super go into it, but I know that you liked it, Luke. I know why people can like it, but I also know exactly why a lot of people hated it, and I think this might be part of the reason why. The reason I hate it, I mean. And I can understand now why people don't like it. So that's my thoughts. Those are my thoughts on Downsizing. So the next one I saw was a movie called Black Butterfly. Have you heard of it, Luke?
Never.
Never. It's on Netflix. It's one of those Netflix originals that they bought. It's a movie starring. Oh my God! Do I not have the information up? I probably don't. It's that dude with the thing, Antonio Banderas.
He's still doing things?
Yeah, I haven't seen him in a while. Right, it's been a minute with him. Right.
The last thing I think I saw him in was what's that franchise? The Expendables.
Was he in The Expendables? I only saw the first one, and I never saw part two or three.
I think he was in like part three, I believe.
Okay. I believe it. Anyway, it stars him and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, another actor I haven't seen in a while. Do you remember Jonathan Rhys-Meyers?
I don't know who that even is.
He's the main character from Match Point. He's the Match Point guy. Remember Match Point?
I only remember Scarlett Johansson.
Well, I know everyone. But he's the main actor.
Like, I would think the guy from... whatchamacallit? What was that movie?
I don't know.
Trainspotting was, in that movie.
No, he's not in that movie at all.
What's the guy from Trainspotting's name?
Ewan McGregor?
Yes, he seems like he'd be in that movie.
Yeah, but he isn't. I think you're thinking of Cassandra's Dream, which is the movie that came after Match Point for Woody Allen. Maybe you're confusing movies.
Is he in that one?
I think so, yeah. Ewan McGregor, I think, is in Cassandra's
Scoop,
Dream.
Right?
Not Scoop. The fuck? That's
Wasn't
Hugh
that
Jackman.
Scoop?
No, that's Hugh Jackman, I think. You're thinking. Okay, it doesn't matter. Anyway, this movie, Black Butterfly. Jesus. Outside a mountain.
What's Hugh Jackman?
I'm going to kill you. Movie description here. Outside a mountain town grappling with a series of abductions and murders, Paul, a reclusive writer, struggles to start what he hopes will be a career-saving screenplay. After a tense encounter at a diner with a drifter named Jack, Paul offers Jack a place and a stay, and soon the edgy, demanding Jack muscles his way into Paul's work, and the two men begin a jagged game of one-upmanship that will bring at least one tale to an end. Yeah, very, very suspenseful, guys. And,
Cassandra's Dream.
That's what I said. I said Cassandra's Dream. You motherfucker. Are you even here?
I was already down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, well. Are you happy now? I already gave you that answer. You enjoying it? You discovered an answer I gave you 2 minutes ago?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me tell you about Black Butterfly, which is like a... I guess it's a thriller movie. And this movie is not bad. It's not great either. It's not like super original. Its concepts are pretty whatever. There is one cool thing about it and one very bad thing about it. And the cool thing about it is that it lets the twist that is going to inevitably come, because... you're thinking the whole time you're watching, not thinking about it, but they obviously make connections of, like, well, does this drifter have to do with these serial killings around the area that's, like, on newspapers and on, news reports and stuff, while he's kidnapping this writer in his own home? And then, like, it goes from that to thinking, like, is he a figment of his imagination? You start thinking of all these things, right? The movie plays with enough red herrings to make you say, well, it could go either way. And I think that's the best part about this movie. It doesn't have anything great. Like, the acting is just okay. Bless you. And all this stuff. But anyway, it's a solid enough thriller. It's not great. But the bad thing it does is that it has an extra twist ending at the very, very end. Basically, if you take out the last 2 minutes of this movie, it's way better than if you leave those 2 minutes in. It's just an awful, tacked-on ending to a movie that completely diminishes every goodwill it might have earned in the previous 90 minutes. So it's one of those types. But that's Black Butterfly. And it's an easy watch. It's a fun enough watch if you're into those kind of thriller type movies. So I recommend that for that. And the last but not least, actually last and definitely least, is Skyscraper, which stars the Dwayne Johnson. I know you've heard of this one, right?
Oh, yeah. Everyone has.
What do you mean, everyone? What is that? Are you implying something? Or
Who hasn't heard of him?
Not The Rock. I mean, the movie.
I mean, I've seen the commercials for it. It's pretty heavily advertised.
I wasn't sure. That's why I'm asking. I thought you were, like, playing around. Like, maybe it's, like, super popular there. I don't know. All right. This movie is, like, it's like a half Survivor movie and half action movie, where, like... you know, half of the problems in the movie that The Rock's character has to come across and challenge himself is are people, you know, bad guys with guns and motives.
Right, right.
And the other half is, like, trying to save his family and trying to, like, bypass a fire or climb a building or, you know, so it's like half survivor, right? And it's and the survivor aspect of the movie is cool. Like, they don't fuck it up too much. It's actually pretty fun. They keep it pretty tense. And, you know, nothing is super creative at all, but, like, they keep it pretty good tense. When it comes to the action and the plotting and the villainy stuff, it is so awful and so laughable and so predictable that it just made me laugh in the movie theater, which I almost feel like the movie's doing on purpose. Like, it has to know that it's copying 90s cheesy movies. It has to know that. And if it doesn't, then I guess people are dumbasses more than I thought. Anyway, and the whole time I'm thinking, like, why isn't The Rock getting a much better action movie, like, screenwriter or something? I don't understand why he isn't making badass movies but he kind of settles to these movies that are just, like, mediocre in the end. And that's what Skyscraper is, unfortunately. It's kind of mediocre. I'm already forgetting the movie as I'm talking to you. Other than, like, that one badass scene when he's trying to save his family from, like, a bridge, and then another one when he's, like, climbing the building. That's a really cool scene. But beyond that, that's really it. And I wish that The Rock is still a very charismatic, cool guy, and I love him. He plays, like, super serious guy and everything, and I guess it's fine. But I feel like he should be making either way better comedies or way better action movies. So those are my two very simple cents on Skyscraper. But it is in theaters right now if you want to see that. The Rock is still The Rock, so, you know, right. he's still enjoyable as fuck.
See, I thought he was going to be the Skyscraper because he's so huge now.
Right. I thought he would have, like, beaten a Skyscraper to death. Like, I thought that's what he was going to do. He didn't do that, unfortunately, but he did pretty much close to that. So that's Skyscraper, and that is it for our recent discoveries.
Actually,
what?
You're going to really hate me on this.
You motherfucker.
I got two that just popped into my head.
Two movies that you saw that just popped into your head.
Yes.
So I've been talking all this time when you could have fucking at least, you know, alleviated some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, sorry.
This is why no one likes you. This is why we prefer you to be away from us. So what are the two movies?
The first one is one of the no-clip documentaries that I watch on YouTube.
Okay.
They're, you know, documentaries based around, like, video gaming and the creation and things of that nature. And they had this one recently about GOG, Preserving Gaming's Past and Future. GOG is a PC gaming service that used to stand for Good Old Games.
Okay.
Do you remember KKND?
Yes. Crush, Kill, and Destroy.
Right. Old-ass hell game. If you tried to play that game now, on a Windows machine, it just wouldn't work. Because the modern, you know, components, it just wouldn't work.
Okay.
What GOG started off doing was getting these old games that people really loved from, like, you know, the 90s and even earlier than that, and then re-releasing them for today's, you know, PC hardware and Mac hardware.
Okay, sounds like fun. Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
Fucking licensing hell for them. Because games weren't thought of, you know, that in that way, you know, they didn't future-proof games back then. So they spent years tracking down certain games. Who owns the rights to the music? Who owns the rights to the game? Who still has the code for it? Everything.
Oh, so they had to track down information so they could give people credit, you mean? Like that kind of thing? Well, or ask permission?
They have to get the rights to reuse it, and they have to, like, update the game. So there was one game they were talking about. They had to, like, kind of rebuild from scratch. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That sounds like a very interesting problem. It's like it's kind of similar to the whole Marvel, you know, in the 90s, how they just, like, divvy up these character licenses without really thinking ahead.
Right. Yep.
Kind of like that. That's cool. What's that one called? GOG?
GOG, Preserving Gaming's Past and Future. And gotcha. The thing is, GOG, the company that actually is GOG, is the same company that made The Witcher.
Oh, really?
CD Projekt.
Now, if only The Witcher was a good game, I would be all
Shut
over
the
that.
Hell. It is a good game.
It's not. It's awful. All right. So, what's the next movie?
Oh, I wasn't finished at this
point. Oh, I thought you were
you're
done.
You're going to rush me.
No, no, no. I thought you were done. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, no. And so the thing is, originally GOG came out as Good Old Games because that's what they focused on. But then they're trying to show developers that they should put their games on this platform too and get rid of any DRM restrictions. Because if you use any other platform like Steam or Battle.net, you have to deal with their platform and all that stuff. Right. So, you know, you're always tied down to that wire. Whereas I could just download this game from Good Old Games or GOG, and it's mine. There's no restrictions on it. I mean, people will take these games and put them on, you know, as a torrent, and people will download them. And they know it. But they said if the games are good, people are still going to buy them.
Right, right. Okay.
So, like, they released The Witcher 3 on day one on, you know, GOG, and it still sold, like, amazingly well for them. And now they're trying to show this, you know, data to other companies, like, you know, Ubisoft, EA, it's like, you know, you guys can get our games on our service. People will go for it. You know, get rid of this whole DRM thing.
Well, hey.
Because, you know, nobody likes DRM.
No, I assume they don't. Okay. All right, cool. Is that it?
All right, yeah, that's it.
Okay, cool.
Other thing was another documentary that my sister recommended to me. It's called The Magic Pill. It's a documentary.
Wait, Anita recommended a movie?
Yes, she did. I know, out of the fucking blue.
Wow. Okay, continue. Tell her I'm proud of her. Anyway, yes. So what's the movie called?
It's a documentary about people that have gone into a ketogenic diet. Ketogenic is, or keto, is when people only eat meat for, you know, protein. Mm-hmm. And healthy fats like avocados, I think coconut oil, and things of that nature. And once your body does that, your body like burns up all the sugar, you know, you get from like processed foods and like high fructose corn syrup, and your body pretty much uses the fat, you know, to fuel it. So people, I mean, there's like scenarios where people, you know, doing it to lose weight because they're sick. Other people have children with autism.
Mm-hmm.
And after they switch over to this, like, the kids are, like, remarkably, like, shifting. Like, I mean, I'm not saying it's curing autism, but it's helping them develop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a pretty interesting look at this. I mean, it's a pretty controversial diet because people say, you know, you need some carbs or whatever, but I don't know. It's a good look at it.
Okay.
And I'm sure, you know, these are some, like, really cherry-picked things, but another fun thing about this, I remember I watched a documentary last year that was based out of Australia, and it had the Aboriginal people in there from Australia. Mm-hmm. Same thing here. And the funny part is they always have a disclaimer at the beginning of the movie that says, hey, we're going to show you Aboriginal people, so don't get like offended or anything like that. And it's just the weirdest thing to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently the Aboriginal communities in Australia are suffering greatly because in the past, like, 40 years when the Western diet was introduced to them,
mm-hmm.
and pretty much it's taken over their lives, the rates at which, like, they are dying from, like, diseases like diabetes that they never had before is astounding. Because they think, oh, it's a Western diet, you know. They're not really as educated, I would say. So yeah. They just say, oh, Coca-Cola? Fine, yeah, my kid can have that for breakfast because they just don't know. And it's just horrible for them. So they're trying to actually, like, wean them off, like, the sugar stuff, have them go back to how they used to be, which was, like the animal hunting, eating, like, raw, I mean, not raw, but, like, eating the meat and, like, the fat from the animals.
Right, right.
You know, as opposed to all the processed Western diet foods.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like it would be a big problem. I think I have heard of that problem for them in other things, like in movies or other documentary stuff. But, yeah, that sucks. I hope they succeed. Because they're still a big part of that culture, right? They should be.
Apparently, the one place that was showing them had a very low population. I don't remember what the number was, but it's a really small population.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Ed?
Nope, that's it.
Awesome. So remember to write down those titles in the doc form, okay? Because I'll
forget. I already did.
Okay, good. Awesome. Now for real, we'll get into our first review of the evening, which is Mission Impossible Fallout.
Your mission. Should you choose to accept it, I wonder, Did you ever choose not to? The end you always feared is coming. And the blood will be on your hands. The fallout of all your good intentions.
You had a terrible choice to make in Berlin. One life over millions. And now the world is at risk.
This is the CIA's mission. If he had held on to the plutonium, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
His team would be dead.
Yes, they would. That's the job.
Ethan Hunt and his IMF team, that's Impossible Mission Force to you, along with some other familiar allies, race against time after a mission has gone wrong. The mission gone wrong means they misplaced three nuclear sphere things to make bombs for. Nuclear sphere things, that's what they're called.
It's pronounced nuclear.
Nuclear. This is written and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, I think the guy who did the last movie, if I'm not mistaken. And he's the guy who wrote The Usual Suspects and stuff like that. Let's see. It stars, obviously, Tom Cruise, Henry Cavill, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, Rebecca Ferguson, low-key other people like Angela Bassett. Some of these people I don't want to say because it kind of spoils the movie if I say their names.
Don't say it.
Alec Baldwin is in it. The rest I'll just save. I'm just going to save the rest.
Jeremy Renner?
No, Jeremy Renner. That's not a spoiler. I mean, he's just not in the movie.
I know. I'm just messing.
Yeah. Well, did you, by the way, before we get into this movie proper, did you want, right? You wanted him back in the movie, right? Or was it just me?
Did I want him back in the movie?
Yeah.
What?
Because he was in the last two. But
yeah, I'm surprised
one.
He wasn't.
Yeah. Maybe there's a conflict
it is
of
what it is.
Schedules or something. Or maybe they had nothing for him to do. I don't know.
Or was it that he, like, I don't know. I thought he took over or no? Or did?
No, but he was, like, more on the government side, like, relaying orders to Ethan Hunt. But
right.
he was a good guy.
It seems like that's Alec Baldwin's job.
No, but it wasn't before. In the last movie, Alec Baldwin was the villain, the government agent that was trying to get rid of Ethan Hunt, you know?
Oh, gotcha.
And then Jeremy Renner was, like, saving them and stuff. Yeah, anyway, I really know these movies. No, I really know these movies. I've been a big fan of Mission Impossible movies since minute one.
Especially two.
No, two is the worst movie. It's the cheesiest. It is awful. But even that movie is still enjoyable to me. So it's not to say that it isn't enjoyable. I can enjoy a bad movie too, guys. But that movie's awful. It's just horrible. Have you enjoyed these movies too, as much as I have?
Honestly, aside from the first one and the second one, and then maybe this one because I just saw it,
mm-hmm.
I can't pull them apart.
You're not the first person that said that to me, but for me, like, they're glaring differences. Glaring. Like, every director has their own stamp and style of approval kind of thing that I think they all have their own different uniqueness to it. Even two. You know, two as a John Woo, quality. The first is a Brian De Palma. It feels like a Brian De Palma movie. The third one does feel like a J.J. Abrams, blockbuster type of movie. The fourth one does feel like a Brad Bird awesome movie. Like, they all feel different to each other. They have the same main actor.
Abrams did the third one?
Yeah, Abrams did do the third one. It was his first. It was his first direct. It was his first movie he did.
Really? He started off with that?
I think so. You can double check me, but I think so. I mean, he did Aliens mm-hmm. before, but his first movie was that. And then after that was the guy who did Incredibles did that, the fourth one, and then Christopher McQuarrie came in, and now he's the only one that's been he's the only repeat director that's come back, I think. So, because he's the Rogue Nation. I've been a big fan. I've been a big fan. I love these movies. I think they all feel different, and they're all cool, and they actually stood the test of time, except for part two. But they're all really good. And my question to you is that, my real question to you, I should say, is that did this movie live up to any expectations you might have had based on the other movies that you've seen, even if you don't remember them all?
I mean, I expected over-the-top action pieces mm-hmm. and a crazy plot with I don't know, some crazy conspiracy to destroy something or take over something.
And did you... So, were you satisfied then?
Yes, I actually was.
Okay. I mean, as an action movie, what do you think of it?
I actually... Well, some of the action was pretty amazing. But not only that, like... This one actually had, like, some really good twists in it.
Yeah, it has, like, three of them, actually. I mean, not three, right. but they have really good reveals.
So, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was very cool. I'm with you on that one, for sure. I don't know if they were called... I don't know if I would call them twists, but I would call them reveals, because they do, like... Like, the movie opens... This is not a big spoiler, because this is the opening. The movie opens up with them getting information on something... concerning these missing nuclear things, and they totally do like it's basically a callback to the first movie, but just like more modern, you know. And they do this cool like reveal thing that they were secretly like holding information on the bad guy they were talking to, and it was really, really cool reveal. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, the guy on the hospital bed.
Yes, that's a pretty cool trick.
And there's two more of those as the movie goes on that are really cool. I think the third one's probably my favorite, and we'll get into that eventually. But
I kind of saw that one coming.
Yeah, me too. I turned to Lexi and I was like, I can't say it. But anyway, I told her that this is gonna happen. Sure. You know. Anyway. But that was really cool. I think Tom Cruise, for a 60-year-old man or however, or 55, whatever he is.
He's still, Scientology, bro.
Dude, I don't know, man. They must give him some powers, because the guy is hanging off those helicopters. He's climbing those rocks. He is jumping on that thing and jumping rooftops. The guy's a... You know, it's... Do you feel the difference between an action scene where Tom Cruise is really doing some crazy stunt versus... an action scene these days where it's more mainly computer generated, you know? Do you feel that difference or no?
I felt like a lot of the stuff, he actually did it himself, didn't it?
He did. That's why I'm asking that question. Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
It felt actually more believable.
Yeah, me too. That's what I'm saying. I think it adds a level of authenticity that you don't expect, because Mission Impossible sounds, and even the title is ridiculous. The ridiculous titles of things that will never happen. But like, but the action, it feels so tangible, you know? And I really liked it. I feel the same way. I feel like it's more real when he does it versus other movies, you know? What did you think of the plot and the premise? Was it... Did it feel too ridiculous at any point? Things like that?
So do we just want to give a quick general thing of the plot? Or, I mean...
Yeah, you can give it. Give it. Tell us.
Shit, I'm already forgetting it.
Don't.
Okay, so...
Well, don't.
Three nuclear things are stolen. They have a chance to get it. However, it's at the sacrifice of, you know, the teammate Luther. So he decides to save Luther.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, that's right.
The three nuclear things get stolen, and now it's up to him to get it. Yeah, or else millions of people will die, and it's on him.
Yes. So now that's the mission, right?
In a nutshell, yeah.
Right. I would say also that this is not a big spoiler, because this is still like definitely in the first quarter of the movie, is that obviously Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg has been the last four or three of them. Ving Rhames has been in all of them, so he's still back. Other than that, though, it's Alec Baldwin's returning character from the last one, and Rebecca Ferguson, who plays the she's the Ethan Hunt of British intelligence, basically. Comes back, and she made a big splash in the last movie. I don't know what you thought, but I thought she was amazing in the last movie. And this one,
I don't even remember her.
Oh, dude, she's like, oh, really? You don't remember her in Rogue Nation?
The only thing I know about Rogue Nation was that the one with the syndicate?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, all I know is about the syndicate. And I'm thinking about it, but I'm confusing it with a James Bond movie, so it's like...
So the funny thing about what you're saying is that there's two other... Sorry for this delineation, guys. There's two other movies that are they're kind of similar, or at least like they were similar in the cultural, like pop culture moment. One is that when Rogue Nation came out, it came out in the same year or the same summer or whatever as Jurassic World came out, the first one, obviously. And you know how in Jurassic World everyone made fun of the main character not taking off her goddamn heels when she's running away from dinosaurs? This movie that I believe came out after, like, they didn't do it intentionally because the movies were already made, but, like, basically Rebecca Ferguson's character, in two different scenes, when she's about to enter an action scene or do some running, she asks Tom Cruise to take off her shoes so she can help her, so she can run. And they do, like, the very sensible, practical thing. Like, I find that as, like, a very good, like, connection between both, you know?
Interesting.
And then the other connection that I just forgot, but it had to do with the plot. Anyway,
Was there like a syndicate type thing in James Bond?
Oh yeah, that's the other one. Inspector, they had that. Inspector, they had the whole organizations of bad guys. You know, like the main bad guy all funded all of them. You know, and there was one of them that, you know, armed them all and stuff. It was like very cheesy, but yeah, basically the same thing. Yeah. Anyway. So this movie, I feel like last movie had an extra like twang of like self-realism. Like it was really really self-aware of how ridiculous the Mission Impossible franchise has been. Like part one, obviously it's super serious and it's more of a spy thriller, right? And then the second one is John Woo, so he's John Woo. The third one is when they start opening up the gates, you know, to have they're like saying, we're gonna make Mission Impossible more of an action heavy thing. And then part four was like fun, but not that self aware. It was more like self aware of a, you know, teammates are a good thing, you know. You need to be a team to be awesome, right? And then after that, they become, like, so self-aware about the fact how Ethan Hunt is, like, ridiculous and is super proficient at always owning the moment and, like, clutching at the right time to save the world. And it's, like, and Rogue Nation did that. It was, like, super self-aware of it. And this one, like, I feel doesn't double down on it, but it doesn't let it go either. And I don't know if you caught wind of that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, how self-aware it is to the main character's ability to, like, do shit that no human can.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense to you?
It kind of does.
Okay. Good. Anyway, I feel like the movie has a lot of that in spades in this one and in the last one as well. All right. So what do you want to talk about before we get into actual spoilery stuff about this movie? Would you think of Tom Cruise, the other actors, anything like that?
I was surprised to see what's his face, Henry Cavill or whatever.
Oh yeah, Henry Cavill, yes, Superman.
Yeah, I thought they were gonna try to, like, you know.
What do you think of his mustache?
It was so fucking weird.
Why was it weird? Okay, so you thought it was weird.
It felt so fake. Like it does not belong on his body.
Is that because you just equate him as Superman?
I don't know.
Did it look that unnatural on him?
It does. It looks way unnatural. Okay. Like maybe if this movie was like set in like the 70s, I could be like, okay,
no,
it's the 70s.
Mustaches are not exclusive to a decade, you motherfucker.
His mustache on him, it looks like it should be.
It looks like it should be? Okay.
Yes, it's so weird.
See, I didn't find it weird. I found that it made the movie better. It made him look like a better, more like nothing happened already. I already cut it out. It's gone. You don't know what I said. You have no idea, audience people. But you're right. You're right, Luke. Even though it does get spoiled in the trailer, I shouldn't say it. But anyway, I think it makes him more of a real person.
Well, that's funny. I didn't even really see the trailer, so I didn't know.
Awesome. I mean, I wish I didn't because of how late that comes in, because they show that, like I said, in the trailer. And I was like really disappointed when I found out it was like an hour into the movie, maybe more. I'm like, what the fuck? You know? Anyway. Let's stop dancing around that, and maybe we should just get into it. But anyway, I want to say a few things for those who may be iffy on the movie. If you have been declining in your appreciation of this Mission Impossible franchise, let's say if you were if you're the biggest fan, like when J.J. Abrams did it last. That was your biggest movie, and it has gone down since. I don't know how it would, but if it did, then these movies are definitely getting less for you than they would be otherwise. So I probably wouldn't recommend it for that kind of person. But I think for most people who enjoy really good action set pieces, and really good like stunt work, of course, and the plot doesn't really mean a lot. It does get complicated sometimes, but they do explain it enough. It's not like that big of a deal. It just gets complicated to be spy-y and just to have something for Tom Cruise to figure out. But I like the chemistry. Like, Simon Pegg and Tom Cruise work well together. I like, you know, Tom Cruise and Rebecca Ferguson working together. They're pretty like a badass couple. I think all that shit really works together. And if you're interested in that kind of dynamic, then I would totally recommend this movie. What about you, Luke? Do you recommend it in the same level that I am, or a different level, or what?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great action piece. It's a summer flick, but I mean, if you're following the rest of the, you know, Mission Impossible movies, it's definitely good. Yeah. I think this one might actually stand out a little bit more than the other ones. So, okay.
Well, that's it. I mean, next time for part 7, you're gonna forget all about this one. You're
first
like,
seven,
who
I'll
the
just
fuck
like,
is Rebecca
Ferguson? One and two.
Right.
And I remember Henry Cavill's mustache.
Right. The stash. Yeah, let's just get into spoilers for Mission Impossible Fallout starting right now.
I know what you're thinking. Maybe they're not here for you. Maybe they're just here for me. Are you willing to take that chance? You have something I want. Right now, that makes me the only person you can trust to get you out of here alive.
I think I'd like to go home now.
Okay. Did you really have to make that sound? You know, it's for editing purposes.
Kinda.
Okay. So you didn't anticipate Henry Cavill being the bad guy?
Nope. Honestly thought it was going to go in another direction.
Oh, well, I'm curious. What direction did you think?
I thought that he was going to be kind of like, yeah, he's CIA, but he's going to kind of like learn the ropes and he's going to kind of maybe take over the Mission Impossible franchise maybe.
Oh, what's that guy? That guy that was in the last movie?
Renner?
Hawkeye. Yeah, wasn't it?
Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, the way that people thought that Jeremy Renner, because he was introduced in part 4, you know, Protocol, and we all thought that he was replacing Tom Cruise in a way. You know, because Tom Cruise is old. I mean, he's going to stop eventually, right?
Yeah.
So we all thought Tom Cruise is still going strong, and you thought that that's what they were doing with Henry Cavill. That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I thought was going to happen with that.
Yeah.
That he was going to just be like the CIA hard ass that was eventually going to, you know.
Yeah, I just don't think Henry Cavill is that charming. I mean, I know he can be. Like, I really like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Like, he did a lot there.
God, that's like his best movie.
It is his best movie. I think it is his best movie. He's like debonair. With a capital D, you know, it actually works. But like,
yeah,
overall,
you want his D.
Do I want a what?
Nothing.
Did you say I want his D?
Yeah.
You want
the capital D.
Yeah, capital D. I want it. Still more than
from
you're
Henry.
Getting. Anyway, but I don't think he has the real like staying power of a franchise yet. I mean, look at Superman. It's the worst fucking thing ever. Anyway,
That's because Zack Snyder doesn't know different color palettes.
That whole studio doesn't know what they're doing, you know? Anyway, let's not get into that right now. That's controversial enough. Okay.
Okay.
So you were surprised. Did it work out for you, though, in the end? Now that, you know, since it was a surprise, did it mesh well? Did it, you know, did it do everything right for you?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, did you buy it, I guess, is what I'm asking. Jesus.
I bought it.
Yeah? I mean, did you? Because that's what I cut out earlier. So what I was saying is that the mustache made him feel like a more realistic villain than I... Right. So, like, I did not really see that coming. So I'm glad, because I think that I think Henry Cavill should. I think Henry Cavill has more potential as a villain, if anything. And he looks like a, I don't know, he looks like a, you know, like a guy you want to see, like, you know, bar fight with people, you know, like in that movie anyway. I don't know. I thought he was good.
He you think he's more like a nitty gritty type of action hero?
Yeah, but he doesn't mind getting dirty about it. You know, he can do it. Like I like that kind of guy. You know, unlike Tom Cruise, who's like more like in the moment. The stunts, of course, but he's more like in the moment, like very smart, and he'll do clever things, right, to get out of because he's so short. so he doesn't have like The Rock. You know, The Rock is a way different action star, right, because of his
size.
The Rock is a rock, exactly. It's how Angela Bassett put it in the movie. I think she says it like you use a surgical knife, and she uses a hammer, right.
Yeah,
that's how she describes Henry Cavill. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of like that's exactly right. So what do you? Here's a thing that I never saw coming in this movie. I didn't think they were going to do this, but they made it a theme where the theme of the movie, low key, is that Ethan Hunt will do a lot to make sure he doesn't sacrifice one single innocent life, even though it makes a lot of sense to do so sometimes if for the sake of millions, right?
Right. That's his downfall. He's too human.
Right. And the other movies, they do this too, but they don't explore it in anywhere near the same level that this movie does. Like, this movie makes it super explicit by dangling Luther's life in front of him, right? And he finds a way out of that, right? And then after that is Rebecca Ferguson's life. And Rebecca Ferguson gets put in the same position, like, kill Ethan Hunt to kill this other guy, Sean Harris's character, who returns back from the last movie as the villain, Solomon Lane. You know, like, you know, she goes through the same thing too. And then he goes through the same thing, obviously, multiple times, where he's like, no, everyone's getting out alive. No one's going to die. Like, you know, like, damn, bro, it's okay. It's almost like someone should tell him it's really okay if one person dies. You know, there's that whole heist, but when they're, you know, taking back the prisoner, right?
That seemed heisty, because you weren't expecting it.
Right. Yeah, I guess. And
they did it, at least.
And then he just changed all the... So, because I'm looking at the movie, I'm like, okay, Ethan Hunt, how are you going to get out of this? How are you going to get out of killing people in this one, right? And then he does. He totally does it, like, in the moment. Like, okay, you son of a bitch.
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
You ever play one of the, I think it was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2?
Nope.
Well, there's a scene where, like, there's this part in the game where you are, like, inside, like, a Russian, like, terrorist organization, mm-hmm. and you go through an airport, and you all have, like, these crazy machine guns, and you just, like, fucking just destroy the whole airport, like, just kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it was going to be like that scene where, because technically in the game, you can pass that level without killing any innocent people. The only people you have to shoot are the cops that are obviously going to be shooting at you. But right. At that point, you're not, you know, people are making the things like that's like a line of duty thing, you know, cops, not necessarily deserve to get killed, but, you know, once they take up the badge, it's like a thing for them.
Yeah.
But it's funny. And I thought of like that scene.
Yeah, it sounds like a little bit similar. Like you had the choice. Like there, they put the choice into the gamer's hands, and obviously most people probably kill everyone because that's what you do in a shooter, right? You shoot everyone.
Yeah, and the thing was like when I saw that, you know, scene take place where when I thought that they were actually hijacking him from there.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, he's not really shooting anybody. Maybe he just kind of shot off a thing, but he didn't shoot to, you know, kill.
Right. Yeah.
But then they're like, you have to kill cops.
So I have a question.
I mean, he even...
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I mean, like there was that one scene where after like the heist was already done and just that random cop just sees them.
Right. And he tries so hard. He can't do it.
Right.
He can't do it. Like he tries...
And he ends up, kills four other guys just to have her live.
He kills four other bad guys, right, than the one person that's innocent. Even though it would like protect his cover and everything, right? It doesn't matter.
Right, because that actually got him in more shit with the chick.
Well, also, like, I mean, this is obviously a spoiler, but that spoiler, like, she turns out to be that broker chick. she's working for the CIA. Yeah. It turns out to be a good thing. Right. It turns out to be a good thing. But, like, if she wasn't working for the CIA, obviously that'd be really hard for the movie to convince me to leave Tom Cruise alive. Right? Like, killing that innocent person, or saving that innocent person, really shouldn't have worked for him as well as it did. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I'm surprised he didn't nail her. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, she wanted to. She wanted the Tom Cruise cock, for sure. It looked like. But yeah, you know, who is that actress? She looks familiar. Do you know her?
I don't think she really looked familiar to me at all.
Well, I mean, you forgot the entire last Mission Impossible movie, so your memory isn't that good, honestly. Her name is Vanessa Kirby. She's from The Crown, which I really dislike. She's from The Dresser. She's in The Dresser. Remember that movie? It made your top 10, I think, or was it Rob's top 10?
The Dresser? No.
The Dresser?
Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's one of the weird aliens in it. I don't know. I was just curious.
What the hell's The Dresser?
The Dresser, we saw it, man. It's with Ian McKellen and John Hopkins.
Right,
Anthony Hopkins, not John Hopkins. Yeah, the movie that made your top 10 and you forgot, yes.
Well, because obviously I didn't see it for her. I saw it for fucking McKellen.
Well, yeah, but she was still in the movie. And I told you the title like 3 times, so you should know it. What the hell are you?
I was legit thinking of like a dresser, like it's like a Narnia thing, like the wardrobe.
I mean, it is a dresser, yeah. No, it's not. I know. we're ridiculous. Okay. So, here's one thing I didn't like, though. And this is like a head fake. There's a head fake in the movie where, remember where they're planning the Solomon Lane escape thing, right? And the movie goes into a, like, there's no audio to it, but they go into them attacking all the cops and taking Solomon Lane out. And,
yeah, that's the scene I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I know. That scene. I'm just describing it. And they do it with a little bit of slow motion, and they add that music, right?
Artsy.
Yeah, did you appreciate that at all? Because I feel like it was a head fake just to be head fakey. Like, why will they show... Why are they trying to put us in the mindset of Tom Cruise as a killer when we know he's killed others, but as long as they're not innocent, I guess he's okay? Like, how do you feel about that scene? That fake scene?
I wasn't sure about it because at first... It has a very different feel to it.
Definitely. Yeah. So when they were showing it, I'm like, are they trying to show us like the downgrading of Ethan Hunt or something? Like he's going crazy?
Yeah, I had no idea. But then when it flashed back to what it was, I was like, oh. And I kind of felt disappointed.
You were? Disappointed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of felt weird.
I felt weird because I think that movie was trying to, like, you know, throw me a curveball when I didn't need one at all in that moment. It's like, I felt like it was a curveball that was unworthy or unwarranted. But otherwise, I like the theme of, like, Ethan Hunt never losing his morality and in a way that's making him, like, a superhero. Like, he isn't just, like, an agent. He is a superhero because of his morality, you know, because of how he's able to pull off these stunts to save even one innocent life, and not to mention the millions. You know what I'm saying? Like, and the movie does a lot of, like, the movie ends with that shit that, you know, the CIA girl says that about him. I'm like, damn, like, this movie is really pushing that through, and it's making Ethan Hunt to be quite the superhero. I like that theme overall. I just don't like that scene. I think it comes in at a weird time, and it feels like the movie's trying to fake me out, and not in a good way. I mean, not like in a "what a twist" kind of way. I mean, just in a bad way. Other than that, though, it was fine. All right, cool. I do that helicopter scene. Pretty cool. I really like that one. I had a lot of fun with that. Him climbing up twice. That probably kept me on my edge the most, as well as the I like the bathroom scene. That was kind of fun. But yeah, the movie has a lot of fun with it. You know, it's easy to watch. It is longer than you might expect in the run of the mill movie. But as far as my money goes,
I thought it was going to be 90 minutes, and I'm surprised it ran just over 2.
Yeah, just over 2, like 2:10 or something. But other than that, though, I really liked it. I can't wait to watch it again. I love the series. It's one of my favorite series. This one and the Fast and Furious series have been my favorites so far, as far as action goes. action.
It's funny. I'm trying to think. Like, I probably can't discern most of the Fast and the Furious aside from, like, the first three.
You can't
discern? I can tell you what the plot is. Oh. Like, I can't, you know, like, the first three, I know what they are.
That's
four,
funny.
Five, six, seven are going to be a little iffy for me.
That's so funny. It's the first four, I could not tell you what the plot is at all. Because the first four, the first four are the worst. I never watched them again. Like, I've seen them maybe one time, like one more time. But the show, the movie, the series got better at five. So five, six, seven, eight are the ones that I know. That's my series. Five, six, seven, eight. Like, it's not even, I know those plots. I can tell you each one of them separately. But one through four are garbage to me. I don't remember anything. It's just awful.
I just remember, that's so funny.
That's really funny.
Three was Tokyo Drift. Come on.
Yeah, Tokyo Drift. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I remember the song, but that's really it. Oh,
the whole song was horrible.
Yeah, but that's all I remember because I know you guys played it a lot.
Ralph played it a lot.
Well, I associate you with Ralph, and you both grew up together, so there you go. So you're really the same. Anyway, anything else you want to say on this movie, Fallout, before we break?
No, I mean, go see it. It's a pretty damn good movie. It's much better than the previous ones, I think.
Yeah, I definitely want to watch it again. I probably could think of other things to say, but we've been talking about it for a while. I figured we can cut it now. But yeah, I totally recommend it. Watch it. Totally cool. And that's Mission Impossible Fallout. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll review our second film of the evening, which is a documentary. We don't often review documentaries.
My favorite.
Yes, it is your favorite. It's going to be Kirby Dick's The Bleeding Edge.
Dick.
I know, Luke. You're childish. Anyway, but you, audience, stay with us.
Medical devices are everywhere.
It's pretty amazing. Tongue depressors.
Prosthetic limbs.
Implants.
Pacemakers.
Because it's everywhere, we have to be careful.
There's this hunger to have the newest technology.
New equates to unproven.
I thought it was simple, and it all made sense.
It costs $25 to bring to market, and they sell for $2,000 a pop.
It's a very profitable part of the healthcare system.
Companies' new products may not be safer than other products in the market, but they will promote them to drive up their profits.
What they did was willfully ignore the risks that they were putting these people to without telling them.
After my operation, I started having health issues.
Back pain, it was debilitating. I could barely walk.
I was going blind. I was seeing stars.
It changed the full direction of my life.
How can you clear something that's been shown to be dangerous?
It's gotten worse over time because of greed. Welcome to the business.
A look at the unforeseen consequences of advanced technological devices used in the medical field. That's basically what The Bleeding Edge is about. It is a documentary out on Netflix right now. It just came out about a week ago or less. Written and directed by Kirby Dick, the man who brought us pretty good movies. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen The Invisible War, which I think might be his last big movie. And he also did This Film Is Not Yet Rated, which is a movie I saw the year it came out, 2006. And I thought it was a very good movie. Are you familiar with this guy, Luke?
I did see This Film Is Not Yet Rated.
Yeah.
And that's the only one I could really think of.
Okay. Did you dig it?
Oh, yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Did I show you that movie, or did you discover it yourself?
By myself.
Okay. I was curious.
I'm not sure about The Invisible War, because I know the premise of that, but I don't know if I actually watched it or not.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think maybe I've talked about it a lot, because I know I talked about it the year it came out, in 2014, I think it was. But The Invisible War, 2012. Yeah, I guess it was a while ago. But it's, I remember talking about it when it came out, because I saw it, I believe, in theaters. Anyway, so Kirby Dick, so he's not like a slouch. He's been around. And as far as documentaries go, you know, it's funny because the guy is, based on the three movies I've seen of his, right, including The Bleeding Edge, is that mm-hmm. the guy seems to, like most documentarians, especially most documentarians that are popular or are critically acclaimed in some way, like this guy, I think they all have, they like choosing topics of things that make them probably angry or things that are very unfair in the world. Or things that are that should be fixed, that aren't, like injustices of our world, right? It seems like that's his motif. Agree. The film is not your rate. It's like his first entryway, kind of the lightest version of that. But, you know, The Invisible War is a big thing about that. It's about the controversy of the military and stuff. But this one, it takes something so specific that you think it can't be that useful. But it is. It actually is a bigger thing than it looks. The Bleeding Edge is about the ups and downs, mainly the downs, of harnessing and promoting and using new technology, which is constantly evolving, as a means to better your life, your quality of life, or bypass, older versions of surgeries, for example, in order to get ahead in life, and in favor of, just because it's new and it's not good. And this movie's basically saying that's not a good reason. And here are so many examples why that is, right? What did you think of it? I mean, you're a big documentary guy. You like watching informative movies. I think your shtick is watching documentaries that inform you of things you never knew or things that you are interested in. Like, I think you like those above, like, the more weirder ones. So what did you think of it?
Oh, man, I loved it. This was, right up my alley. It got the blood boiling, and it,
Yeah, so Oscar picked good, then.
Yeah, I automatically recommended this to my sister, because she's like, hey, watch this one. And I'm like, hey, since you're in the medical industry, you need to watch this one.
Oh, my God, that's right. Yeah, did she talk to you about it after, or no?
No, because I literally saw it yesterday. So I think I'm like 25 minutes into this, and I'm like already sending her messages like, you need to watch this on Netflix ASAP, and then tell all your friends to watch this.
I know a lot of nurses. I should really talk to them. And I don't know any doctors, but I know plenty of other practitioners, right, in the medical field. And I should really let them know about it. I didn't think of that. But yeah, this movie, you said it right when you said blood boiling, because it did that to me. I watched it last night. I started around 3 in the morning, and I honestly thought I was going to watch it in two parts, just because, it was really late already. And I know, for you, it was like, what? It was really late, and I thought I was going to watch it in two parts, but I ended up watching the whole thing, and I was, like, super into it, and I was, like, so angry about a lot of things. It's just, like, one thing after another. Like, this isn't even the most important issue to really tackle, right? When you think of the global world, like, right? The whole world, right? Mm-hmm. Or even this whole nation. It's just this nation alone. Or this continent, or whatever. Like, it's not the biggest problem. We should not be really that worried about it, but it does such a convincing argument, and doesn't really have to convince you that hard, because the evidence is right there in your face, and it's horrifying. But, like, it feels like it's a no-brainer to fix this problem, but also, we have bigger fish to fry in the end anyway. How do we start? That's the problem. How do we really start? And I know that the people in this movie have a different altruism about how they're going to handle this problem, because to them it's much more personal. It's not personal to me. I don't have a medical device inside me, and I assume you don't either, right, Luke?
Negative.
Right. Do you know many that do? I know some, but not many.
I mean, I know a guy that I know, he's got like a pacemaker, and I remember he had to get it replaced at one point because he said there was like a defect in it. I was like, what? How the hell do you have a defect in that thing, Usually it's like a tried and true thing. Pacemakers have been around for ages.
Yeah, they've been around for a while. Yeah, since the 80s, maybe even more. Longer than that, right? And the movie says it too, I think. They say it in one of the things. And I feel like, it's one of those things that you feel like, they're all real people, but like one of the people in the movie, one of the talking heads, they even say it as an example, like, you figure that if it's on the market and ready to be used and has been ready for, like, let's say 5 years or 10 years, right, this new device, and you think that it has been studied and trialed and experimented on and, check its durability before it even got to market, you think that that's just common sense.
Right.
And common sense is not a valid viewpoint when it comes to this field, when it very much should be. And that's what boils my blood, is that I thought that, I thought that, cobalt, hip replacement, joints was already a passable, awesome thing. I thought it was, they picked it because it's that metal that works just right, and it probably doesn't do anything bad against you. But no, wrong. It's this movie shows an example of exactly the opposite of that. And like, you think that they must have gone through this, but they haven't. Or nor do they care. It's really, it bothers me a lot. I assume you felt the same.
Oh my God, it's so bad. Yeah, because essentially the way the process was made, and they explained it, that there's a loophole that the FDA has.
The 510K?
The 510K. Where if you are reintroducing a product, let's say a different version of like a hip replacement, because it's similar to a prior hip replacement, mm-hmm. it does not have to go through all the testing and like the study that you would normally need for any other new device to enter the market.
Right.
And the issue is, like, if let's say an iteration like 2-3 generations down the line had a defect, a new one will get approved because it's not the one with the defect, even though it's coming off like the same like chain.
It still piggybacks off the shittier model as if it's okay. It's just right. An awful idea. Whoever made that, and I know that the guy explained it, how it started, the whole, you know, the loophole thing, the daisy chain, he called right. it. I know he explained it as a, it was meant to be like they bend the rules once for this one product, but it became the standard.
Yeah, it's for like every over product. 90% of all the things come out, they go through this process.
Right. But also, like, the FDA's requirements to approve new devices, even without the 510K, is still drastically less than it is for a drug to be approved, right? They go through the
some very sketchy shit.
Yeah, and then when you think of some of these devices, not all of them are super mega important, but some of them, like the eSure thing is by far the thing that pissed me off the most. I know it's the one thing that I'll never experience, but it's the one thing that pissed me off the most in this movie. Just because it's so obviously, like, I look at the device, by the way, can you tell people what eSure is again, just in case?
So eSure was this thing, it's like a metallic coil thing that they insert into the women's fallopian tubes, and once it's set in the fallopian tube, it causes scarring, and then it kind of scars over the device, therefore making the fallopian tube completely blocked off. So sperm cannot enter the fallopian tube, therefore you cannot get pregnant.
That's the idea, mind you.
Right.
And and so the problem with it is, it's just, you look at the device, which is like this coil metal thing, right? And it looks like a horrible idea. Why would you put this device, this metal coil snake, inside your fucking fallopian tube? Why would you ever do that? Because looking at it alone, you could tell that this thing could have a chance of breaking off into pieces,
right.
Which they show examples. It looks like it could bypass through the tube into the actual ovary, causing God knows how many problems. And also, and then they go into that whole session where they talk about doctors inserting different ones after they realize that they missed. So people right. would have like 8 of them in there. I'm like, what the fuck?
Dude, those x-rays are pretty brutal.
They were pretty brutal. Yeah, they were awful. I mean, the most brutal one of them all, I think, was the cobalt hip replacement thing. The one they showed.
Dude,
it
wasn't even there anymore.
It wasn't there. It was awful. The metal eroded through the flesh, and it eroded the flesh itself. It was awful. I mean, thank God it was only 2 seconds, but man, that was not a pretty picture. like all this stuff. And then the medical doctor. Remember the doctor? The robot, sorry? The doctor robot thing?
Oh, so before you say that.
Yeah.
A funny story. As I'm watching this documentary, and I'm thinking, I wonder if they're going to talk about the Da Vinci.
Oh, really?
So I just so happen to have met a person in my lifetime. I will not disclose anything.
Right.
We're at a party. We're both drinking, and we're talking about what they, you know, what he does. And he tells me that they make these, you know, like robots that will perform surgery, you know, like without, you know, actually using the doctor, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. He's like, he looks at me and he's like, if you ever get operated or you see a doctor operating on a Da Vinci, get the hell away from there. And I'm like, are you serious? He's like, yes, we build them. Those things are fucking horrible. It's like, and this is coming from a guy that builds the machines. Like, there's just so like many issues he saw with the project itself like, and the quality of work. You think you would have like top of the line people working on this? He said no. Some of the people on his team were complete idiots.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the major cons against the Da Vinci device or robot, whatever, is that they initially had really high requirements to, like, you know, pass
training,
get all this proper stuff and certification before you even start, and then. But then they started cutting back on that training stuff because the thing is so expensive
as
and they want to sell more.
Approved. Yeah.
Right. And also they describe that they talk about that one guy who only became comfortable after 300 surgeries with the machine. Mm-hmm. I'm like, bro, that means 300 should be the standard, not 3. You know, not 30.
You know
30.
What's funny?
Yeah.
There's a YouTube channel I follow called Linus Tech Tips. This guy went into a data recovery center where they will like repair hard drives and things like that. The people that train at that lab practice on hundreds of hard drives before they are actually given a legit real job. And this is just the hard drive we're talking about.
Yeah.
On the other spectrum, we're talking about major surgery on someone. Like,
we're talking about lives. A lot of people's lives, death.
Yeah.
Death or complete change of lifestyle. Complete change of your
death
life.
Death or your fucking MP3 collection or whatever files you have.
Right. Like, we're more worried about our MP3 collection than we are about people's lives and livelihoods and joints and hips and livers and God knows what. It's ridiculous. It's really, really, really ridiculous. Now, I have this one question. You are a tech guy. I mean, Luke, I mean, would it be fair to call you that? Like, you're into technology. You're into what's new.
Yeah.
You're into, right?
Yeah.
Does this movie feel like it is... It is not degrading you, I'm not saying to you personally or anything like that, but do you feel like it's more anti-tech because of his general message of saying, whoa, just because it's new, it doesn't mean it's great, you know, and all this stuff it's saying about technology, advancing too fast. What do you think about
right,
that?
Right, no, I agree with that. And this thing, I mean, obviously, like, when I'm looking at my tech, it's, you know, it's things I can track. It's this processor. You know, it's this graphics card, it's this laptop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is stuff, you know, technology in the medical field, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Like, you ever think about those clickbait articles you see on Facebook about some of those crazy miracles they're discovering or they're inventing? Some of them are medical related, but others are not. Like, some of them are, like, anthropological related. And do you ever feel like... like it's too much too fast, like the way this movie is saying? Or do you feel like this movie opened your eyes to that now?
I mean, I don't think it's too much too fast. I think it would slow down if the proper channels had to been, you know, they had to go through proper channels, proper testing, proper, you know, insurance that things worked properly over the long term instead of just a short-term thing saying, oh, okay, it's good, let it go.
Yeah.
I mean, they found that video when they were approving the Assure device, and
oh
they actually
God.
Made a joke like, oh, yeah. In 10 years, people are going to say, well, you know, how did they ever approve this device? And they started laughing about it.
Yeah.
I mean, they all had concerns about the device, but they still approved it.
They all had questions, very obvious questions that I would have, that they weren't, that the Assure people didn't even answer. And they still let it approve? Like, why don't you wait for them to give you a good answer before you approve it? Like,
especially if you're dealing in that area of a woman's body,
yeah,
you need to have like the best fucking device out there before I would even decide to approve it.
Right, you have that Latina woman Anna who basically loses her home, her job,
yeah.
or her husband because of this fucking thing. I'm like,
she has to give up her kids to a foster family.
Yeah, a church
she can't run, afford them.
Adoption family. Yeah, it's insane. It is really out there. Obviously, we're spoiling the whole movie, are you realizing? But it's
it's
a documentary.
You know, and there's that whole instance where they're talking to a gynecologist at a conference, and he's like, oh, you know, there's always going to be like an abnormality, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I get it. But when you have like, the Facebook group had like over 30-some thousand women in
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And that was just in the United States alone. Then they had subgroups for different countries.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Europe and all the other countries, like, automatically started banning it. But the U.S. was just like, yeah, we'll let it run.
Yeah, well, that's funny because... that's not funny. It's actually very obvious. And now it's becoming
it's
tiresome.
Sad.
And it's so... it's so obvious now. It's so beyond obvious. But the European version of the FDA simply asked the question, we want more trials on this thing. And as soon as they asked, Escher pulled out all this stuff from Europe. There you go. Problem right. gone. But, like, we can't even ask that question. But we're like, remember? So there's this positive / negative ending to the movie. If you don't mind getting into it now, where it has a bunch of information at the end, you know, like, oh, you sure still a company that does this and all this stuff. At the very end, they say what happened when the movie first aired. You know, this movie aired last year in festivals and aired, I think it came out in some theaters this year. Not 100% though. But before its Netflix released, it actually did something to Escher where they basically forced the government to force them or whatever to put yeah. to tell they're to taking, have right
you they're say. Taking it off the market finally
well I don't
at
know
the
if
end
it was
of this off, year
at the end of this year to take it off the market. But how long did it even no I is it off the market? I thought I read it that it said that they have to make sure that the patients are known of its hazards now, you know what I'm saying?
Is it?
I thought that's what I read at the end there, that the government had to make the doctors tell the patients of its hazards, the hazards of Escher, as opposed to before, instead of saying how great it is, they have to say the negative stuff too in order to sell it. Like, they were still allowing it to sell, but they have to do it with this warning label to it.
I could have sworn that they were going
to
help.
No, I think I read that too, but I'm saying, though, they did some sort of, like, half answer to it before that. It was, like, really ridiculous. After the European yeah. thing. After the European thing, I mean. It was just weird, and it was, but yeah. Anyway, but I like when movies can actually affect, you know, something like that.
Right.
Even though it's just one company. I mean, this is just, I mean, what's the Escher part of? The Johnson & Johnson group, right? I think that's the one.
Bayer,
my bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these, and the thing is that the same old story, unfortunately, applies to this movie, and that's greedy-ass people that can clearly get away with it, and they're still out there completely getting away with it, and they will probably never get caught about it. And it's like the same story we've seen about countless other problems, whether it's, you know, crime related or like politically motivated, or if it's popularity, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. They could literally have 50, you know, feet of skeletons in their closet, and they probably will still get away with it, because that's how these movies feel, and that's how they are. And I'm not saying it's the movie's fault. I mean, I don't want them to lie to me and say, oh yes, by the way, all these companies, all their CEOs are in jail. I wish that was true, but I don't want them to lie either. I just hate the fact that nothing's gonna happen, and it makes you feel right. also like just horribly depressed and really angry, like in the because moment
I just pulled up the documentary on my tablet because I downloaded it
yeah
from Netflix, and it actually says, yeah, shortly after premiere of this film, Bayer announced it would stop selling Escher in the U.S. at the end of 2018.
Right. Good.
They're probably still selling it, but soon it'll have to stop. But, right. Yeah, and one of my biggest things is is the fucking lobbies. The lobby groups for this are just one of the things that keep pushing the stuff to keep going on how it has been, to loosen regulations. This is one of the things where you do not need to loosen regulations. If anything, you need to tighten them.
Right, and it really makes the government, I mean, because, like, I mean, there's many ways the government is still helpful in general, but most ways, it's like they're picking away, like, all these other companies, you know, industry in general of any kind, is picking away at it, where it's making the government look like a weak child. And that doesn't have any power at all. Like, what's
and
the power?
This is why I fucking hate lobby groups.
Yeah, I'm
because
with
what they will do is they will. I mean, if senators and lawmakers are making decisions on this, they need to be informed themselves. If I'm going to have
and not paid,
right? Well, no, it's not even that. It's like I'm not going to have some rep from this company going to tell me how great this is, because obviously he's not going to tell me the side effects, or he's not going to tell me the whole story, or they're going to downplay it. You are essentially talking to hype men.
Right. A salesman also is not a doctor. for all this the medical stuff, like specific to this right. problem. Like they say that a lot, time and time again, how some of these doctors who are not informed, they talk about some of the doctors that are selling like the e-sure thing. They're just simply not informed. But like it's also like on them a little bit to fucking not accept something from a guy who's selling you something that he himself doesn't have a license to understand the medicine behind the device. Like it's ridiculous. It's just very common mistakes that shouldn't happen. Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, I think we give doctors way too much credit in this fucking world or this country. People are like, oh, my doctor said this. No, your doctor's an idiot. He knows right. one thing.
Right.
If and my doctor tells me to change my oil, fuck you. I'll talk to a mechanic.
Right. And also, I think they did a very good job at selecting the subjects for some of these companies from some of these devices, like the doctor with the hip replacement guy. Like, the fact they chose that guy from Alaska who rode the bike all the time, right? Like, that guy had a very specific problem that he himself should probably have known in advance, should have asked questions. But even being a doctor who can make a mistake, even, you know, and he describes how he likes putting things together, he likes the mechanical of it all. Like, it feels like he's a guy who should know, but even he made a mistake on his right. own body. And he's a doctor. And I think the movie does a really good job of sometimes subtly, sometimes not so subtle, of telling you, like, the different shades of problems that can occur sometimes from just being like an innocent mistake to the obvious, I'm just greedy, I want all my money, fuck your death, you know, kind of deal.
Well, I think,
yeah.
Then they also had doctors that were like,
oh yeah,
I'm not going to use your product because you're not hooking me up with anything. You know, there's no kickback yeah. for me.
Yeah, talk about that one sales rep guy. Product. Yeah, that sales rep guy was talking about that from that whole lobby expo thing. And then there's that one guy. Remember they were talking to that one doctor outside one of the conferences? I forget which one it was.
The OBGYN one, yeah.
Yeah, the OBGYN one, right. And the e-sure ladies were talking to this guy and he just wouldn't hear it. Because, yeah. what, they're not doctors, that's it? That's the only reason?
Right.
It's like he holds himself.
He's so cocky, he knows what he's doing and it'll never right. affect.
Right. And just will not accept anything and just like yeah. laughs it off and walks away. Like, what a fucking asshole. Yeah, it's just very close-minded, shitty way of thinking. It's not even, like, all you need to do is just ask one follow-up question, and you could probably get a lot more out of these companies and these devices than you ever would otherwise, you know? So easy. Like, but it's not. It's not. We're letting them get away with it all. And I definitely,
if that's my doctor, fuck him. I don't want him as my doctor.
Right.
He's an old-timer set in his ways. I need people that are constantly looking to improve. Like, just because yeah. it's been working, you know, he still needs to challenge it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very picky about any medicine I put in me. Like, if it's not something like low, like ibuprofen, I really will question it to death and will probably not do it unless I have to. I'll also be picky about devices too, I guess. I don't have anything in me, but like, now I will be as picky with that as I am with drugs because I definitely don't want to stick anything weird or something that will break down and, you know, give me cancer or something. I mean, these poor people, and it's an industry of money. Like, everything costs these people a lot of money, and it takes forever for them to get any sort of, like, to get their voices heard and so on and so forth. So, essentially, what we're doing on the show is that we're reviewing a movie that is... I mean, we're not reviewing a movie. We're more like approving its message and in a way
right.
like piggybacking on the messages and the pros and cons that it's giving. So by saying these things that we've been talking about, we're basically saying that the movie's pretty good and you should watch it because it's very good because of how we're talking about it. So in a way, we're telling you that the movie's good that way. And also... It's like we're a commercial for that movie. Like, if you didn't know anything about it, if we could get one person into this movie that they didn't know anything about, and they maybe know someone that has, like, an e-sure thing or God knows what, or a mesh thing. Remember the mesh thing?
The mesh is so bad.
It's so... What an awful idea. What a horribly awful idea.
Even when they were testing it, the doctor said,
"Yeah,
it's not good," and they still brought it to market.
Right.
And there's
so
many lawsuits.
The guy from the company. Yeah.
There's
and
so
the losses don't matter
it, yeah.
to them because they make so many more billions, right? It doesn't matter. They don't care.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. Anyway, I think that's it, right, for this movie, if you want to call it a review. I mean, yeah, we have nothing else. It's short, but
like I said, I'm sure some of these were very hand-picked things. But when they throw numbers at you, that there's like thousands and thousands of people in court with these companies for issues that they're all having, then obviously right. we have a very flawed system.
Right. And also that means it's not a fluke. It's not like it happens to one person sometimes because right. the doctor didn't know what he was doing. It's more like this fucking device is a terrible idea and we should get it out. Like there's a difference. There's a line that crosses there. And showing us these numbers on top of showing us all these examples of people is reason enough to do it. And we should get off our asses and get these devices out of here and get them in check. So that is our review-ish of The Bleeding Edge. Check it out. Hopefully, despite our spoiling thing, definitely watch it. It has a lot more information that we're obviously not spending 90 minutes to talk to you about. So check that out for sure. It's on Netflix. And also, I'm really glad that it's on a platform like Netflix, which makes it really easily accessible for most people out there. So that's always
good. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Definitely way better. So check that out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to introduce Roth into the show. Luke won't be a part of this.
I will be gone.
You'll be gone. But next time around, we'll talk about next time marathon ideas and as well as what did you think of this movie for next time? Because we have to get going, actually.
And,
but anyway.
If you have a marathon idea, why don't you shoot us one, listener? Why don't you do some work? Yeah.
Why don't you do some work?
Do some little work.
Oh, great. Maybe we should. If someone sends us an idea for a marathon, it would be awesome. Anything you want. Nothing's off the table yet. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review The Shop Around the Corner. Find out what that's about and stay with us. And until then, bye, Luke.
See ya.
Later.
Mr. Krolik.
Yes, Miss Melba.
About that blouse.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, but I had to.
But I want to thank you. I'm so glad you did it. You know, in the bottom of my heart, after thinking it all over, you're so right. That blouse was awful.
Oh, no, not awful.
Yes,
no,
it was. Of course, I wouldn't admit it at the time, but what woman would? We hate to admit we were wrong. That's why we're so feminine.
Oh, well. This is the first time you've shown a little sense. Quite a change in you, Miss Novak.
I know it, Mr. Krolik.
Now, you just keep this up, and I think we'll be able to get along much better.
Thank you, Mr. Krolik.
Quite all right, Miss Novak.
You know, I was planning to wear that awful blouse tonight. I have a date with...
Tonight? Well, didn't you hear what Mr. Matacek says? We have to stay here and decorate the windows.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Yes.
Would it be possible? Do you think you could spare me tonight? And then maybe Mr. Matacek would let me off.
Well, so that's why I'm a gentleman. That's why you've learned so much from me all of a sudden.
I don't understand, Mr. Krolik.
You want to get the night off?
I have to, Mr. Krolik.
Well, you're out of luck. Oh, that was such an obvious trick. I almost fell for
Please,
it, too.
Please, Mr. Krolik, I have to get off tonight. It's terribly important.
You know, for the last 6 months...
Two employees at a gift shop can barely stand each other without realizing that they are falling in love through the post as each other's anonymous pen pal. The Shop Around the Corner, starring Margaret Sullivan and James Stewart. Frank Morgan, Joseph Skildrout. Sorry, fucked that up almost. A bunch of other people, too. Directed by Ernst Lubitsch. I love this guy. I've only seen two of his movies,
okay.
Including this one. The other one I saw was To Be or Not to Be. Have you seen it?
No.
It's really funny. It's really, really funny. I like it a lot. Anyway, but The Shop Around the Corner is one of those classics that I saw, I think in film school probably, and I just like totally loved it. And obviously, the direct connection, for those who may not know, although it was pretty of a popular connection in the 90s when this movie was made, but the main connection is that movie with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan called You've Got Mail. It has basically the same exact plot synopsis, except that one's written large. You know, she's like a small business owner, and he's like the bigger one or something, like a big fish trying to eat her small fish owner business type style. So it's not like they worked the same together. I think it was something else. And obviously, they did it through email, back when email was a new thing, you know. So that's where that movie got from. It's a direct remake, I guess.
Basically.
So, but The Shop Around the Corner is a classic. I didn't even see the year. Not bad about that. That was First Time Jitters. 1940. So, yeah, it's a good decade runner-upper there. I never said who wrote it either. I should say that. Samson Raffleson, based on a play by Miklos Laszlo. A lot of accents in these. I don't know that one. Anyway, so, Ralph, without further ado, I've seen it before. This is my third or fourth time. This is your first time. I know it was. So, what did you think of The Shop Around the Corner?
Well, I thought it was really cool. I like the dialogue in it. The setting I found really, really weird because we're in what country are we in?
Oh, man. One of the descriptions I'm sure says it because one of these descriptions are like mega, mega long. It's Hungary in Budapest.
Yeah. So, interesting location.
In the earlier 1900s, too. I think it's set a different decade.
Yeah. Also, this gift shop has everything.
Yeah, so it says gift shop on that plot synopsis. I don't think it is, though. I think it's just a store. It's just like a store for supplies or for whatever. But I guess as men, maybe what they mean by gift shop is not the way we look at gift shops today. Yeah. Like for tourists to come in, you know, like from to when they visit O'Hare or something. Not that kind of gift shop, like at hospitals.
No, this is a gift shop for
gifts.
Everyday gifts.
Right, for your significant other. It doesn't mean you have to be a tourist.
Right,
like,
exactly.
It's not just about
like
Budapest.
Birthday gifts, all this
right.
Stuff, yes,
yeah. Anything people might need. So it's an actual gift shop for gifts, not like souvenirs. So I guess that is a big difference. Because I was also lost by that in the shop description here. So, like, anyway. But, yeah, I really dig this dialogue. I think it's really funny. I think it's also multi-layered in a way that, you know, I always keep forgetting. Again, this is like my third or fourth time. The first time I saw it, I for sure enjoyed those layered subplots of things. Like, everyone in this movie that has a speaking role has their own voice in it, has their own, I should say, almost like their agency, but maybe like their own motives. So, for example, like, yeah, that Vadash character, who becomes a bigger deal later in the movie, which is one of their co-workers, one of their sales reps or whatever, he has some clear motives that comes clear later in the movie, but the way he speaks as if he's had them all the time. You just don't know what they are until it comes up. So like, he'll give his opinion on things based on his own selfish reactions to his own life, you know, and like, the other guy who has two children or whatever he talks about, the other coworker, he speaks, you know, in a very different affluent manner. That's very, you know, neighborly and stuff like that. He acts different. Everyone has their own style, so to speak. And obviously James Stewart is James Stewart. What grabbed onto you the most, without spoiling, I guess, in this movie?
Character-wise or?
Or anything-wise.
Oh, no, I enjoyed the dialogue. I also enjoyed what, I think the movie did a pretty decent job of, what was the main character's name? I'm bad with the characters.
Oh, that's okay. I can find it. I'm right here at the IMDb. IMDb. It's, Kralik.
Kralik. That's his last name, right?
Yeah, his first name is Alfred. I think they mentioned it once.
Yeah, I think so also.
So.
And
then Novak is the chick.
So... Right, exactly. Because they call her Miss Novak the whole movie.
Yeah, exactly. It was so proper. So.
Yeah, I think the thing about this, what they did a really good job of was putting you in Kralik's shoes when it came to the confrontations. You felt like, oh, okay, this feels somewhat reasonable. Like, you could see why he didn't want to approach it this way. You could see why he would... that route. It's obviously a little bit sometimes also like, why didn't you say this? But, you know, in the moment you think, mm-hmm. Yeah, but in his thought process, he's thinking something different, you know? And it's hard to say what's going on in the moment. But I think the movie did a pretty good job of giving us a good reason of, like, why he did things and feeling that also.
Right. It's like it's funny because there's two main conflicts in the movie. One of them, or the solving of one leads to the other,
right?
And the first one that leads to the other is the first one is the Matuszek thing, and then which leads to the love thing, because this is a love story in reality, but it's a love story that hides itself as a love story for a long time, even though the bones of it is at the beginning, because you start off with him adoring to his coworkers about this love, this great girl that he met, that he doesn't know their name,
yeah.
Never met her, through their pen pals, and they talk about great things, poetry, and all this stuff, and she's wonderful. And
by the way, they have this quick throwaway line that totally makes sense still for nowadays with email or whatever chat up thing you're doing.
Any catfishing device?
Yeah, the whole catfishing thing. Which it's called, where the guy bring one of his friend brings it up. He's like, yeah, you know those things in the ads in the paper. that, you know, you could write, write a pen pal. And he's like, yeah, I've been writing him. He's like, yeah, it could also be a, you know, a guy.
Yeah.
Like living with his, living, you know, living by himself or something, and you're like, you don't know, like,
right? Because he talks about his fears, and some of them are shallow. For example, like, he obviously wouldn't want her to be like ugly. They mention a fat thing, right? I have that problem. It's like a throwaway line, and then he mentions himself, like, he probably won't be good enough for her image either, and he's very, like, he doesn't know. And
right.
It's all on the open.
Yeah. That's funny. He's like, I want her pretty, but I don't want her too pretty.
Exactly. Yeah. He's very specific. And like I said, the matter check problem leads into that, for the finale, I should say. But I think throughout the whole time, you do see, like the very first thing before, you know, I think after that scene we're talking about when he first starts about, you know, this pen pal thing, we see his interactions with his work, and the way they treat sales clerks in this world, and I don't know how true of it is in this time of when this movie was made, or what time the movie is depicting, but they do a lot of like background work. The fact that it's in Hungary, they're just trying to set up a fact that most people are out of work. I think that's all they want to set up, is that they're lucky that they have a job.
Right.
And then
they get paid well.
And the thing is that, back then, sales clerks meant everything. Like, they get all the credit for the sell. You know what I'm saying? Like, they make as much as the store makes, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, if the store succeeds because they're succeeding,
yeah,
and vice versa.
An investment in it.
Right. So, like, they treat it a lot more seriously than like, a guy who works at Gap, you know?
Right.
Very different.
Yeah,
very,
yeah,
very
Gap
different.
Is like,
it doesn't feel the
I
same.
Get paid hourly, like,
right.
Okay.
It doesn't feel the same at all. So, in a way, the movie's it feels oddly dated or old-fashioned, right, today if you're watching it. But just, you know, if you can just grasp on that handle a little bit, you can understand what I'm saying. But so anyway, and then you can tell by the way that everyone else is, like, appeasing Matochek, who is the boss, he's the owner, appeasing him and being a yes-man to him, and he is exactly doing the opposite. He gives us good reasons, and they usually tend to be right, which is why he's been there, and he's the oldest clerk there, even though Matochek is trying so hard to, like, retroactively impress his own coworker because he values his opinion so much.
Huh? Employee.
Employee. Co-worker, I said?
Yeah.
Sorry, employee. You're right. And then, you know, invited him to dinner before the movie started.
Yeah, the movie starts off that they had dinner the night before.
Right, which is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
I mean, it's a big deal today here. I mean, imagine if your boss invites you. Anyway, well, maybe that's not a big deal. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah.
Well, if he invited you to his house for dinner,
yeah,
it is a big deal.
Yeah,
it
right?
still
it's
is a big deal.
Yeah.
That's the difference between, like, oh, yeah, we had, you know, we had a dinner after work or something like that.
Right, yeah.
That's a different story.
That's true. So I like the interactions of the first couple scenes do a really good job to streamline a lot of information that you would have to, that otherwise people would have to, like, exposition dump to you. Thank God they didn't. And that is that that these relationships are, the dynamics works a certain way. Like the way that Clara Novak meets Kralik is very good, and also very, you know, it's a little funny, it's a little aloof, but it also keeps a tight hold of the main mystery. Well, the main mystery between the characters, not really with the audience, but you know what I mean, that they're actually the pen pals.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, anything you want to interject there with?
Again, it's this whole thing about there is a dynamic, you said, with everyone. Not, I guess, caters, but to the boss, and he does. He has the other dynamic where he's like, "I'm just honest." And with that box that plays that song,
He says a lot. No, Dolce Notia, some of that. I don't remember. Yeah, that Russian song.
Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, it sounds awesome." He's like, "No, it's horrible. If you have to open it every like 20 times a day, you get tired of that song."
And in a way, the strength and the fact that Novak gets a job because she was able to sell probably the one and only box to that one lady, right? And basically her audition. The strength of that gets her job there, but also it's not strong enough for her to sell the rest of the boxes.
Right.
But it's a cool spin, though. It's like, it's like they're like they treat salespeople in this world and in this store the way we treat like auto salespeople. Like they have to convince you in a way. Yeah. They have to pitch you,
something
right?
Like that, yeah. You're
they right. have to pitch this stupid music box, cigarette box, for as a candy box, and like, but the music's so annoying. And like, no, it's a reminder you stop eating so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually a losing weight thing. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a nice spin, I guess.
Yeah, she put it in a nice way. Yeah. And that's a good spin.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't know. The movie's simple. The movie is simple, but it helps it because it just is all. There's nothing crazy going on that has to throw you to this, you know, like, oh, is this going to happen? Oh, this person, whatever. Like, the movie's pretty cut and dry. I love the talks that Novak has with Kralik when they're alone and you're like, oh, you're never. They have it the first time. Once in the shop right before the date, right, that they were supposed to meet up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small one, and where she's telling him that that, you know, like, you wouldn't even imagine like a real man, blah 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 blah.
All right.
And then obviously at the date site we have one, and then later when she's fainted or something, where she's sick,
he comes
over.
Yes, that's right. And she's fainted like it's like sick from heart breaking.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of thing.
And and then you have those scenes are very cool scenes because he lets her do all the talking.
Yeah.
Like most of the time he just lets her do all the talking. He's just like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And he wants to get out what he wants to say, but at the same time, all this new information.
It's like she's constantly convincing him not to fucking tell her the truth.
Yeah, it really is.
Which adds a layer to the funny, like it adds to the comedy because of how ridiculous she's letting, like, but it's all conceivable enough. Like, it isn't too bad, but it's good enough where, like, it adds a layer of laughter to it because she's convincing her way out of love without knowing it.
Right.
And we're laughing at her because James Stewart is, obviously, because if he was actually really offended, he would stop writing to her or he would tell her the truth and say, like, I don't want you, right? That would be the harder truth, you know, bummer version of the movie, right? But he's not doing that because he is in love with the girl that writes these letters, regardless, or he feels that way anyway. And all his fears about not being enough, you know, that's why I like the movie a lot, because in halfway through the movie, or even before halfway through the movie, that's when he gets that reveal fast. He gets the fact that that's her, and he has his sweet time, like convincing himself, fixing his life, like he wants to be in a certain position in life. You know, the whole manager thing that happens later on kind of works for him in that benefit, right? And the fact that it's Christmas, obviously, and all that adds to it. But I'm saying he waits a long time for the reveal. The movie is about the reveal to her, but his reveal is known way before.
Right.
And I think the movie is smart to do that because it puts us not only more in his shoes because it's James Stewart's movie, but like also it shows us what's going through his head. Like every time he tries and she convinces him not to, it's either his fears about himself or his fears about her not loving him.
That's true.
Right? And I think it's a cool playoff. It's like he's battling himself, he's battling with her, but she doesn't even know it. And it's really funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. So did the comedy work on those levels? And then, because there was no slapstick or anything like that.
No, there wasn't.
So it's all just situational comedy.
Yeah, he lets her like dig her own grave. It's really weird.
Gives us a shovel.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it is that whole that does play that whole aspect of he is in love with the girl he's been writing with.
Yeah,
he's not just in love with with the looks of Novak, because I think we all knew that she was already pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had mentioned it before she got hired. I think he mentions it to her, like, you're a very pretty girl, you probably could do well here.
Yeah.
Like before when she gets the job.
Right, yeah.
Like, but we're not hiring, you know, like.
And I mean, and not hiring because he knew Maruchek's response before. Remember, because she's like, when he was like trying to help her, when he thought she was a customer, Maruchek, he's like, I'll help you with anything. And there's no impossibility. Like, oh yeah, I'm looking for a job. That's an impossibility. Like instantly, right?
They don't. Why did you let me go through my spiel?
Right. And he's like, dude, I tried to warn you. Try to tell you not to go in there. Yeah, and it works out really well. But you're right, the movie is not complicated. Although it makes a situational comedy complicated. It adds layers to it and stuff
that.
Even uses that coworker guy with the children as a way to get a better gift for Christmas. And Like, they do stuff like that that's really funny and adds layers to everything, for sure. But the movie itself stays on its simple trajectory. And obviously, my next question would obviously be, what did you think of the A plot that becomes a B plot about Maruchik's wife and the whole cheating thing? How do you think how all that worked out and in service of the movie and leading to the love story that it's supposed to be?
It's weird because you don't know what to do with that. Like, this progresses the movie, right, in the beginning. Or it gives us the kick in the where it needs to head into the right direction for the movie. Mm-hmm. But it does become this A plot that becomes a B plot. I don't know. I overall thought I didn't see that coming. Like, the whole thing that the girl was, the wife was cheating on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't think that was the case. I thought it was something else. I thought she was sick or something, but then once you get it, you're like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. And actually, what's his name?
Craddock.
No. The shop owner.
Maruchik.
The way that Maruchik handled it was, I mean, typical of a, that's the way I could have seen, definitely see somebody handling that, where he thought it was a guy.
And it makes sense, too, because we start off with him being, you know, because they even, someone else mentions it, like, offhand, like, you know, Maruchik sees you as a son kind of thing. That's how close they are, I guess, or that's how much he admires him as an employee. You know, they had that dinner before. And based on the strength of that, we know that he is the only employee he knows for sure that has met the wife.
Yeah.
Means it further deepens that jealousy. And he explains himself off when he finds the truth about him, you know, like, I'm sorry, I was jealous. I just wanted you out. I couldn't stand to look at you and all this shit.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was a pretty cool plot. I mean,
yeah.
It works out. It does have this weird thing where he almost killed, like, it goes pretty depth.
Yeah, he almost kills himself.
More
and
depth
than
I thought.
And the errand boy saves him. Yeah. Not saves him, but, like, interrupts him and keeps...
Interrupts him, yeah.
Right, which leads to him not doing it.
Yeah, which leads to him getting a job.
And wait, leads him to get... By the way, he gets funnier later on, for sure. Because, you know, he never... It's like he's just been waiting for the chance to mouth off. And now that he's able to do it, he saved the boss's life.
Yeah.
He has the credibility to answer the phone the way he did after that and talk to Maruchik that way, Maruchik's wife, I mean, and I'll talk to the new errand boy. Like, it's really funny. The guy's so cocky. He's so cocky.
Yeah.
But in a really funny way. He's like, we're seeing, like, that paperwork from the old movies that we think of, you know, extra, read all about it. We're seeing him promoted. We see him get promoted. We see that boy.
That is very true, actually, right? If you look at it that way.
It's almost like, I wonder if people back in 1940, they thought that was like a trope that Ernst Lubitsch was playing off of. Because I don't know how common it was back then or common it was for people to make fun of back then of that kind of trope. Maybe there are a lot more totems of tropes in this movie and we're giving it more credit than maybe it deserves from its time because those tropes no longer exist for us.
Yeah, yeah.
So we see the movie as wholly different characters or characters cut from a cloth of, you know, of just from those days, not as opposed to from tropes or something. You
right,
know?
Right.
Like,
right.
I don't know. Maybe there is a difference there.
That is true. That's interesting.
Yeah. I know this movie was well received. I know it wasn't hailed, but it was well received.
Yeah. Well, it's comedy. Like, people didn't take it serious. Like, even now, they don't take comedy serious.
I mean, I take this movie personally. I think the way it handles the situational awareness of the comedy. It's what the whole movie is that. And I like how it you know, the plot is the comedy, and the comedy is the plot, and it goes from there. I think that that along with the acting and the timing of some of those lines, like the way she responds with the assuredness of her face, like, oh, you wouldn't understand this wonderful man. Like, at Atsuk, I mean, if she said it just slightly off, it wouldn't have been as funny.
Yeah.
Like, all of that, I think, makes this movie an actually good, like, goldmine of a good comedy. Through the ages of movies for me, like you think of whatever 80s, whatever 90s, whatever 2000s. So I do think it holds up. I'm just, again, but maybe I'm not aware of whatever potential biases there would have been if I was alive in 1940. Just interesting to think about, like a nice little study of the mind. But, you know, we basically said the whole movie, but what do you think of the whole Vadas thing? Like, the way he handled his first major action as manager of the store.
I mean, I'm surprised he didn't do it faster.
I'm surprised he didn't do it faster, but also, like, the way he did it was strange because he could have just, like... Because Manocek, you know, you contrast that with Manocek, right? Manocek, when he was jealous and hating Kralik, and when Kralik was like, I know you seem very satisfied with me, like, I am, actually, and he accepts his resignation and gives him a great letter of reference and all that stuff, but he doesn't hate him still. But the way Kralik responds, he... Even though he hates this guy, not for jealousy reasons, but for other reasons, probably less powerful than jealousy, he basically fights this guy off. Don't you know? Gives him no letter.
Yeah, look at it the other way. Also, yeah. It's almost like he's defending his father.
No, I get it.
Right, exactly. Yes. So he's doing it at the other way of like, yeah. Like you tainted what a great man for me is, you know, or whatever. Yes. This is.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, yeah,
I agree. Anyway, I like that there's a comparison there between like father, quote unquote.
I also like
son,
like he's very he's like a nobody character in the movie, really.
Relish.
Until the twist, right?
He was annoying. Every time he put his butt his nose into the conversation, yeah. Like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, and everyone thought he was stuck up or better than everybody.
And also like he was a little fucking tattletale or something, because remember in the opening when they were waiting for Marche to come in to open the store, in the beginning they were talking about some food, or someone mentioned something about the dinner that he had, right? And he's like, and as soon as he repeated, Vada said something about the food that Kralik was talking about. He's like, now wait a second, I didn't say it like that. I'm not saying I'm making fun of his food or anything. I just said I ate soup, you know, or something like that. I don't know what he said exactly. But, like, I'm not making fun of the soup, because immediately Vada will say, like, oh, the soup was terrible. No, I didn't say anything about terrible, you know. Because
yeah.
I think they all know him as a little thinker, a little thinky McThinkerson. No one likes. Again, those beginning scenes are great for character establishment. I mean, there's not much else I got in this movie. But anything else you want to add or talk about or elicit or enlighten?
No, I can't add anything. I can't add anything that I can think of.
I mean, are you a podcaster? No, I'm kidding. You're fine. Okay. That is it, I guess, for The Shop Around the Corner. I'm going to have to add, like, a spoiler disclosure at the beginning of the show, I think, because we didn't have separate for the spoilers.
No, we didn't.
And also, we didn't do it for the documentary. I know you weren't here for that. Because the documentary is just information. We just talked about the information.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know. So, I'll put that at the top of the show. But Mission Impossible, we did spoiler separation.
Dun, dun, dun,
all right.
Dun,
dun, dun, so, that is it for our show. You have been listening to Roth saying doom, doom, doom. What are you, fucking Gurr?
Boom, 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 boom.
Anyway, you have been listening to another movie podcast. You can always support us the best way possible, actually, you know, besides money, is supporting us on iTunes, giving us a rating, preferably with 5 stars. It is the best way for new people to listen to us, guys. That's the best way. People say it all the time, and you must think that it's just because we like stars, little golden stars like kindergartners. No, it is a true way. Algorithms work, baby. It gets people to listen to us more, and obviously we've been doing this for years. And if you like our show, or if you like this show even, just this one alone, give us a 5 stars. You can retract that later if we give a shitty review of some movie you like a lot more. Anyway, and let us know what you think of these movies. Also, a big thing, let us know what you think of Shop Around the Corner, Mission Impossible, all these movies. You can send that to podmoviecast@gmail.com. All these notes, all the details of everything you can find us on, including the website, otherpodcast.com, is on every show notes for your show, whatever podcast or catch thing that you have. So it's really convenient. Just click, bait, copy, paste, whatever. And if you want to look for me and find me personally on Twitter and on Letterboxd, or on there, not and, you can follow me at Armen Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph, where can people find you?
You could follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph. That is with 2 R's and an F.
Yeah, no P-H.
Yeah, none of that shit.
No. None of that shit. Now, Ralph, you're choosing the next films for us. We don't have the next marathon ready and going for you guys, but next time on the show, though, Ralph, I want to talk about the marathon that we just did. Just, you know, I want to have a little time to do that. And then maybe have an open discussion on the next one. I talked to Luke. He has no idea.
Of course
so
not.
We may just use ourselves. So, okay. So, what are the next movies, though?
Good question.
Did you forget?
I don't know about it.
Okay.
We have Christopher Robin that we're going to watch.
All right. You want to see this one?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
This is a great it's going to be a great episode, guys, because it's going to be a bunch of weird movies. Okay, Christopher Robin,
mm-hmm.
Black Klansman. Okay.
It sounds like a pairing.
It sounds like a great
Jesus,
pairing.
Jesus, like, he's like eating a croissant and a mutton.
Yeah, and then I forgot the other movie that we were going to watch. It's a Netflix original.
Father, Like Father?
Like Father.
Yes. Although that one, I think, just based on the way Rob just said it now, might be subject to change.
Might be subject to change, yes.
Right, if there's like a better VOD movie.
Right,
Fresh,
yeah.
Fresh Reformed, for example. Then I mean, maybe he'll choose that.
Maybe. I don't know what he said, but yeah. Whatever.
Don't worry about it. They heard me.
Right. That's why I said he.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I might be changing it for something better, or if we find out, oh, my God, this movie's gaining traction, we'll watch it.
Yeah, there's basically, whatever. It's a family movie.
Right.
Comedy movie, and...
Starring who, anyway? Oh, Kelsey Grammer, right?
Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, my God. The name came. Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, my God. We were,
dude, we
all
just
day.
Couldn't think of it all day.
We were like, who the hell
who is the hell is he? I'm like, Graham? Graham? Yeah.
We got the Graham part.
Yeah, but...
Yeah,
yeah. Kelsey Grammer. Grammer. Shit, we nailed it.
Kristen Bell.
And Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Damn, that's way off my mind. Anyway, that sub is going to be in 2 weeks, guys. So I'll see you guys in next two weekends from now. Until then, I am Oscar.
He's Oscar.
Motherfucker.
And Ralph.
Later.
You will not remember the last hour and a half of what you have just seen. You will forget the contents of this movie.